I'll continue to cover whatever I believe the most accurate, truthful news is, no matter what the effect is on me. You simply decide whether or not you want to back the undisputed OG organization of the last 31 years in the fight against the globalists. We had great success within 3 years of me getting on air on Access TV, then local radio, then syndicated. It's all hand of God on it, working through you.
You're working with the foreign banks and the military industrial complex. This is all their idea.
You can follow people around. You can harass people. You can back up your banks, your buddies. But a revolution of peaceful information is coming. And when it comes time, you people are going to be brought to punishment.
You're lying to the public. It's disgusting.
This is reality. Truth is stranger than fiction. And I know my best work is ahead. And I know the tribulations we've been put through are part of God's larger plan. And I've learned a lot. And I've learned to be beyond humble and understand this is a sacred mission. But you're part of your own destiny and your own sacred mission. You better know good and evil's real. And you better know the devil's second biggest trick was convince the world he didn't exist. His biggest trick is convincing the world good doesn't exist. Because I know that I'm a fallen creature and I'm a sinner and I have my struggles. But I love God and I love justice and I love truth. The globalists are the cheaters, the liars, the insecure ones. And it's time for us to recognize evil, recognize cheating, recognize fraud, and oppose it no matter who it's coming out of. Attack the sin. What alternate universe is this? What planet did I wake up in? Attack the lies.
And you, Congressman Deutsch, are a liar and a fraud.
And that's why I've been the most attacked. All hell broke loose when I snuck a Bohemian Grill, the only person at that time to ever get a footage out. When I made films about the USS Liberty, all hell broke loose. When I made films about 9/11 being an inside job, instantly, all hell broke loose. I was put under national security investigation with the CIA and FBI directed, you find dirt and you put that guy in prison.
They also want to hear from Alex Jones. He was subpoenaed by the bipartisan House committee investigating the insurrection.
But because the country and the grand juries were completely corrupt, because of the grace of God, not because of anything I did, I've been protected. That's why I have no fear, only the fear of failure. Only the anger that I'm not stronger. And that's why I ask you to support us in your word of mouth, your prayer, and financially. Because I am only as strong as you make me. I am a weapon of truth and war against tyranny in your hands. And I ask you to wield me. My only desire is to overthrow tyranny. My only desire is to unlock minds.
I've got one that can see.
My only desire is to empower humanity. My only desire is to seek the truth, because God is truth. I have been tempted by the devil himself, and only by the Holy Spirit have refused it.
All right, folks. Find and share that video on Alex's X at Real Alex Jones. And remember to support us at thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com guarantees that we're not just in the fight, but continuing to expand. We got a lot of really, really big expansion plans coming up in the future. But it takes money, and it takes money to fight these people and win these battles. And thank you to everybody who stuck with us. I was talking to some of the people that were here yesterday with Gary Franchi, and they're like, so, you know, how many times have you had to take your stuff back and forth? And it's just been, you know, it's been exhausting. It's been a very exhausting and frustrating year or so, but we've survived, and, you know, this is just what it takes. We just got to bear it, get through it, get victory, turn it all around on him. But I just cannot tell you how thankful we are for your support at thealexjonesstore.com and infowarsstore.com, keeping us on the air, keeping us in the fight, and of course showing your pride, wearing the shirts around, wearing the hats around, telling everybody you know about us. It really makes an incredible difference. And right now, the Alex Jones blowout sale, you can take an extra 25% off some of these last chance designs. Will be the last chance to get some of these iconic designs. Go now to thealexjonesstore.com. We got a lot more to come in today's program. I'm going to open up the phone lines for your calls in the next hour, but I still got a lot of videos to get to, and we're going to move on from Israel once and for all. Because there's a lot of other stuff going on, including our old friend, my old nemesis, Lena Hidalgo, being censured and humiliated for being such a ridiculous failure. You love to see it.
Alex Jones has good genes. In fact, there's only one thing better than Alex's genes. Alex's genes on Methylene Blue. Just look at those pecs. That charm. The focus. Get your Methylene Blue now at thealexjonesstore.com and make good genes great again.
For a limited time, you can get this limited edition Murdered Out InfoWars shirt at thealexjonesstore.com with the American flag on the shoulder. It's historic, and it funds the operation. We've got other cool shirts that just came in as well. The new Liberty Bell 1776 Declaration of Independence shirt is out. It's limited edition, and it's got my signature on the back. That really triggers libtards. And then there's this limited edition. I weaponized the American people. It was actually you weaponized them, and we're winning. Get it all now at thealexjonesstore.com. Thanks for your support.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
We've got a lot of news still to get into. I'm going to open up the phone lines for your calls this hour. In the third hour, we'll be playing an interview we did yesterday evening with Gary Franchi of Next News Network, which was just a pleasure to meet him in person, as it's one of the few outlets alongside InfoWars that has survived this war for as long as they have. It really is something admirable, and it was just a good sort of freewheeling conversation about his experience as a White House correspondent. And we talked about Ron Paul for a while. I want to play some Ron Paul clips probably this hour, since this weekend is his 90th birthday. And we have to show respect and honor for the people that paved the way for us, like Ron Paul, who's been fighting this fight for about 40 years before I was born. So just incredible to see him still, you know, as sharp as ever. I want to play some videos just to remind you of how good things could have been, how we had so many opportunities in the decades before Trump to right this ship and vote for somebody whose policies made at least a little bit of sense. Certainly a lot more than the policies that we got. So we'll do that a little bit later. If you want to call in this hour, the number to dial is 1-877-789-2539. That's 1-877-789-2539. Give us a call now. We'll take your calls in this segment and the next. Let's go to some... I don't even want to go to these videos. I'm going to read this story. DC police commander placed on leave over deliberately falsifying crime data. As attention has turned to Washington, D.C. and crime in the district in the wake of former Doge employee being attacked, it has been revealed that a commander with the Metropolitan Police Department was placed on paid administrative leave in mid-May after being accused of falsifying crime data. Commander Michael Pulliam was placed on leave and under investigation for questionable changes to crime data, five law enforcement sources familiar with the investigation told NBC4. Pulliam was the commander of the 3rd District, which patrols the Adams, Morgan, and Columbia Heights neighborhood. The police union accused Pulliam of deliberately falsifying the data and claimed police supervisors in the department have been manipulating crime data to make it seem as though violent crime has fallen considerably in the district compared to 2024. Essentially, what happens is they show up to a place where a crime has been reported, a felony offense of some sort, and they simply register it and note it as a significantly lesser crime to make it look like less felonies are being committed. They say, when our members respond to the scene of a felony offense where their victim is reporting that a felony occurred, inevitably there will be a lieutenant or a captain that will show up on that scene and direct those members to take a report for a lesser offense. So instead of taking a report for a shooting or a stabbing or a carjacking, they'll order that officer to take a report for a theft or an injured person to the hospital or a felony assault, which is not the same type of classification. And in fact, when you charge things as a felony assault, apparently that type of crime is not
categorized in the crime statistics, which I don't even really understand, but that's the case. Apparently, they say when management officials are directing officers to take reports for felony assault, or if they're going back into police databases and changing offenses to felony assault is not a category of crime that's listed on the department's daily crime stats. It's also not something that's a requirement of the FBI's Uniform Crime Reporting Program. So by changing criminal offenses from, for example, ADW bat or ADW gun to felony assault, that would avoid both the NPD and FBI from reporting that as part one or a felony offense, as a part one or felony offense. So they're rigging the numbers to make it look like the city's safer than it is. You know, what is the term for this mindset? Just, I guess there's cheaters. It's the same mindset. You know, we've played the video before. This guy's playing pool. One guy's like, you know, we can lower crime rates by just not charging crimes. If you just don't arrest and charge the people, the crimes don't show up on the stats, and you can prove you lowered the numbers. It's like, what is the mindset behind this? What is the mindset? It does. I guess it's just for like personal aggrandizement, right? So you can point to it and say, look, under my leadership, you know, crime fell. You can point to the fake numbers of that. Just seems like there's a divorce between the real and the perceived. And I guess that would be the, I guess that would be the distinction. Do you care more about reality or the perception? Do you care about crime actually being lowered, or do you just want it to seem like it's lowered, you know, to justify whatever policies that you're putting forward? And again, it's not something that you can necessarily, like, you can't like write a policy to correct this. It's just a lack in general of honor, I guess you could say. Just not an honorable thing to do. It's just a weaselly thing to do. And it's just one of those things that's like, not only are we losing our ability to like maintain complicated systems, I think as things break down, we're going to lose our ability to even know whether those systems are being maintained or not. Like, which is, if you don't have any accurate information, you don't have any accurate way to judge the effects of your policies, you have no way to determine whether your policies are working or not, just what are you supposed to do? What are you supposed to do in a democracy, in a republic, where you're supposed to be an informed voter, when the crime statistics are falsified and the racial aspects of the crime statistics are falsified? Constantly people are posting, you know, mugshots of Guatemalan dudes listed as white, right? Clearly just like black African guys listed as white in the statistics. Again, not out of an accident or an oversight, but because these people manipulate the stats. It's more important to them that they create the illusion that corresponds with their, you know, delusion than acknowledge reality, because reality can be uncomfortable. And so they'd rather lie about it, I guess. So again, how you're even supposed to run a country when you literally have no idea? Yeah, I receive accolades for low crime statistics. You receive chaos in the streets. Great stuff. What a deal. What a deal that is. Meanwhile, satellite images show Israel building up forces for possible ground invasion of Gaza. That is, of course, going to happen. It's not going to be easy for them because, despite what they tell you in their most sincere sounding voice, they have not really remotely hampered Hamas's ability to engage in combat. So they're basically stuck with the same problem that they were stuck with on October 8th, 2023, not having the manpower available to achieve the accomplishments that they set out to achieve. So good luck. Good luck with all that. Meanwhile, AI, YouTube is going to start AI age verification next week, apparently. There's been buzz around a not-so-new initiative from Google and YouTube that would put age verification in the hands of AI, and it's rolling out in just a few days. The new system will determine whether users are 18 or not, and it's being put in place next week. Before that, there are a few things to know. YouTube recently made an announcement that made some waves throughout its user base. A new age verification system will be instituted for all YouTube viewers, powered by an AI model that simply determines your age. One of the main reasons some users are heavily concerned about the new age verification system comes down to the method of determination. In the past, users would need to input their birthday, which would tell YouTube how old they were. From there, certain content would be locked or allowed, depending on if you were older than 18. The content wall is still set at 18, but instead of self-reporting, users won't have a say in how old Google's AI model thinks you are. YouTube's AI will likely be pretty good at guessing based on a few factors, but it's not going to be 100% accurate. And that's where users are getting worried. The company noted its determination process in a couple of announcement posts. Both stated that YouTube's AI would be able to tell how old the viewer was based on what videos they're searching for, the categories of videos watched, and the age of the account. Ideally, if you signed up for YouTube in 2007, the AI would have to reasonably assume you were 18. But what if you created the account recently or it's a new alternative account? Then that method is out the door. So then it comes down to what you've watched and searched for. I mean, what is the point? What is the point of any of this? What is the point of any of this? If YouTube determines you're under 18, whether that's true or not, there will be a few changes made to the account. First, personalized ads will be turned off. This is likely one of the driving factors for the new system, as selling personalized ads for minors isn't allowed in many regions. As most minors lie about their age on YouTube, the company could face legal trouble if found to be doing so. YouTube is going a step further past the legal protections, noting that the digital well-being tool will be enabled by default. That includes take-a-break messages and bedtime reminders. This app will warn users about privacy concerns when they comment or upload a video. Oh, good. So AI mommy is coming to put us to bed. Oh, hooray. That's just what we need. You know, I look around the world today. I say, you know what this world needs? It needs multinational mega corporations having super intelligent AI spying on you and telling you when you should go to bed and when you should turn down your music and what they think about the content that you're, you know, absorbing. And if you upload something, a reminder that you're uploading something. Are you sure you want to upload something? I guess we're just babies. I guess we're all just babies now. And because the American people can't be bothered to pay attention to what their children are looking at online, now we all have to be treated like babies. I guess because we can't be trusted not to be uploading, you know, Elsa Spider-Man gore content on kids' accounts, we all have to be told by YouTube, it's time to go to bed now, sweetie. You know, I guess this is the option that we have to determine whether we want to live in a country that's peopled by intelligent adults who can think for themselves and make their own decisions and take on the responsibility of being a human being with free will, or if we all just need to be slaves of the AI babysitter. We're all just going to be under the thumb of the AI babysitter because apparently we can't determine what is good or bad for ourselves. We can't determine when to go to bed or what volume to put our headphones at. We all have to, it all has to be dictated to us by the evil psychopaths that put this whole program into operation in the first place. The same people that apparently are incapable of even making a dent in the hundreds of millions of child sex abuse material that is shared on a daily basis. They want to tell you when you need to go to bed because they know better than you. Again, I mean, it's the same thing that we say all the time for things like TikTok or things like, you know, people complain about, well, China serves their, you know, citizens science videos and they send our kids twerking videos. I've always just said, okay, this is the question. Can you handle having technology? Can you handle not having your hand held? Can you manage being a human being with free will, or do you need your handheld? Do you need the bumpers up on the bowling lane? Those are the options. Either the government can dictate us what is good for us or not, or we can be adults and show that we have the capability of wielding just the most modest level of power responsibly. It's absolutely pathetic. And the most pathetic thing about it is that like at least China seems to have their citizens' best interests in mind. Like it might not even be that big of a deal if we had a government that even pretended to care about us. But we've got a government who is pretty open. I mean, it's pretty well established at this point that their primary motivating factor is eliminating the native population in this country and the rest of Europe. So, if we had an elite that cared about us, maybe it'd be fine. Hey, maybe then they would have TikTok showing your kids science movies. But you know what would happen if we put these levels of control in the hands of the people that currently occupy the halls of power. They would show your kids nothing but transgender propaganda. Like, they're just awful and they hate you. So we're really in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, mostly as a consequence of the really unrelenting incapacity for Americans to moderate their own behavior. It's very pathetic and sad. But I mean, what do you expect when you've got history teachers like this? From Infowars.com, history teacher says Incan child sacrifices were, quote, voluntary and kind, claiming that those who object to them have a, quote, white education. And yeah, this is where it's going. I actually have a couple videos about this. We'll go first to clip number 15, where this beautiful, loving, liberal woman is here to tell us how advanced the Incas were. Let's watch.
You were telling me the Spanish looked at this and said uncivilized?
The Inca.
Yes.
Built the Moray terraces as an agricultural laboratory because each separate circle created a different microclimate so they could figure out exactly what to grow at what elevation.
Whoa, the Inca, hold on, pause, hold on. They created microclimates so they could tell. Yeah, it's a hole in the ground, lady. You're looking at a hole in the ground, okay? You're looking at a stepped incline hole in the ground, lady. They did that to generate microclimates to study what grew best at different elevations. Okay, it's a hole in the ground, lady. That's a hole in the ground. Okay, sorry. I just wanted to make sure I heard that right. Microclimates were being created. I mean, sure, you may have seen the cathedral at Seville and think that that was impressive, but have you seen a hole in the ground? Have you ever seen terraced steps on an incline? I mean, these Incas, it was really next level for them. I mean, sure, the Spanish had guns and the written word and books. And I believe by that point had even developed the novel. And sure, they had cultural traditions stretching back thousands of years. I mean, sure, they had a highly developed aristocratic caste system born of hundreds and hundreds of years of continuity. But I mean, had they ever created steps? I mean, you're going to call that civilized? Have you ever seen a hole in the ground, though? Okay, back to the lady telling us how uncivilized the Spanish were compared to the glorious Incan superiors. Let's watch.
Who cultivated 44 types of corn and 4,000 types of potatoes.
Whoa.
The Inca, who built this stuff 600 years ago, and it is still standing because it's all earthquake-proof. The Inca, who created salt flats that still to this day aren't privatized.
Pause. We got to pause. It's too much. I'm forgetting the stupid crap she said when she says other stupid crap. Okay, sorry. We got the hole in the ground is microclimate. The hole in the ground is also earthquake-proof. Incredible engineering. Did you know? Do you know that the hole in the ground is earthquake proof? Incredible, incredible stuff. 4,000 types of potatoes? Really? Why though? How many types of potatoes do you need? 4,000. I don't believe you. Frankly, I don't believe that claim. I don't think there are 4,000 types of potatoes. That's a lot. 4,000 types of potatoes, lady? Are you sure? Are you sure? What is it, 60 types of corn or something ridiculous? Okay. All right. 4,000 types of potato. What was the last thing she said? Sorry, can we back it up a few seconds? It's too much. It's too much. All right. We got microclimate terrorist, you know, control pits, I guess. We got 4,000 types of potato. My mind is blown. Here I thought, you know, conducting Latin mass was the height of civilization. I didn't realize 4,000 potatoes. I mean, my goodness. Okay. I mean, that's more varieties of potatoes than Italians have varieties of spaghetti. We got a poster on the wall at our house. It has all the different types of spaghetti. There's spaghetti you've never even heard of. They got some crazy stuff. There's the super thin ones that look like bird's nests. There's the rigatoni. You got the penne. I mean, you look at that and you go, there's 100 types of pasta here. 98 of them are superfluous, right? It's all the same. 4,000 types of potato. I'm sorry. I've watched this video before. I missed the 4,000 potatoes thing. You know, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I need to rethink. I heard the thing about the temperature control and the microclimates. I remember that. But I don't know. I mean, now she mentions 4,000 types of potato. Maybe they were the more civilized. Maybe we had something to learn from them. Let's go back to the video for a little bit, shall we?
Because it's all earthquake proof. The Inca, who created salt flats that still to this day aren't privatized. They're all sharing it from the same hot spring in the mountain.
No way.
And everyone gets a share.
Everyone gets a share.
Not to mention Coricancha, Machu Picchu, the fact that all of their cities were made intentionally in the shapes of animals that were important to them.
Oh, they're made.
This reminds me of exactly what happened in Tenochtitlan when Cortez laid eyes on that city for the first time. He wrote in his diary that the temples were grander than anything he would have seen in Sevilla. Yeah, you're telling me the Spanish saw this and they said, nah, inferior.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, they didn't have the wheel. They didn't have the written word. They performed child sacrifice. They were basically living in the Stone Age. She's like, 600 years ago. All right. 600 years ago, the college at Oxford was like 300 years old. But they have got holes in them. No, but they have terraced holes in the ground. It's incredible. It's incredible, isn't it? What are we doing here, lady? What is this? Go enjoy Machu Picchu. It looks beautiful. Go have a wonderful time. Appreciate the Inca. Why bring your seething leftist inferiority complex along with you?
I need support. We are maxed out, and I can do so much more in offense, guaranteed beat them even faster in court. And got this other stuff going on. I'll leave it that with the Justice Department, the good guys coming in, and the task force on weaponization, that I need funds. So I need you to go to thealexjonesstore.com, subscribe as your monthly donation for $30 a month as a VIP, and know you're doing that bare minimum of support, cancel any time. Not a very hard commitment. You just do it month to month. You charge $30. You're a VIP, and when you want a T-shirt or you want a supplement, you get it because it'll just build up in your account. $40 to spend in the store. You spend 30, you get 40 automatic discounts on everything, special sales, special offers. I'm asking everyone to commit who's never supported the broadcast by buying anything to become a VIP today at thealexjonesstore.com. And then you know you're doing the monthly support. Ever have an issue, don't want to do it, cancel. One click, it's your profile. But by being a VIP, you get massive discounts, special offers, and so much more at thealexjonesstore.com. And it's a way to show your support. We need your backing. I am 100% dauntless. If anything, I get overheated because I've got so much energy and I'm so angry at these people and it bleeds off into my life. I need your backing. I'm backing you. Quite frankly, if you don't back me and my crew, what we're doing, you're nuts. And I'm not mad at you. I'm just saying you're crazy. Evil hates this transmission. We've got their number. And if you don't back the organizations fighting with everything they've got for you, because we're all in this together, well, you've rolled over. You've run up the white flag, quite frankly. And that's what this is. People ask, man, thanks for fighting. Thanks for never giving up. Wow, why does it break your spirit? It intensifies my spirit. To know we're up against pure evil and we're turning the tide and we're winning. And then to know that if we don't fight hard, they're going to win and commit humanity to a nightmare of evil. You think stuff's bad now? You ain't seen nothing yet. Thank me for fighting for my own future and yours collectively? There's not even a question of fighting these people. Look at them. They've got to be opposed. People tend to think being persecuted is oh, you want to stay away from that. Oh, so you want to stay away from the fight. No, it's like John Paul Jones said when he got commissioned as the head of the U.S. Navy, right when it was starting, and he was writing to the Continental Congress. He said, I only want the fastest ships. I only want to be sent into the main war zones in direct action. They said, here, it's our fastest ship. Go out. He immediately goes out and engages and takes over all these British ships, two, three times the size, just ramming straight into them. Well, that's what I want to do. I only want the fastest ships. I want to go directly into action. I want to go 24 hours a day. I want reporters all over the country. I want to be 50 times stronger against the enemy. I want 50 times the audience. I want victory. You think what we've done to the enemy's been effective so far? It's nothing. I have not yet begun to fight. So support yourself. Support us. Do it. Or be conscious that you didn't fight when the time was right. You hesitated. You took this as another entertainment venue, just some other show, just more talk. This ain't talk. This is the targeting coordinates to take down the enemy. This is the Death Star plans. This is Sting, the Goblin Slayer. They hate this blade. This operation is a sword that is plunged politically, culturally, spiritually into the hearts of our enemies over and over and over again. They hate it. It's a standard of their defeat. It's a symbol of their weakness. That's what we're doing here. This is serious business. So I'm coming to you, asking you to continue to commission us in this fight. We've already delivered you more victories against the enemy than any other media operation in the world. And I'm asking you again, for all of our collective futures, to come to our aid now more and take your fight to the 110% level. Tell the truth. Be accurate. Stand against evil. Have courage. Until it's not even having courage, it's what you are.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. We're going to go out to your phone calls momentarily. I do want to tell you about a new sale at thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison, if you want to let them know who sent you. It is the Alex Jones Store blowout sale this weekend only. It's your last chance to get some of the really popular limited run designs on hats, shirts, coins, mugs, and hoodies. If you get any 5 items from the sale, you get 20% off. Get 10 items from the sale and get 25% off. Plus, you're getting additional discounts if you're a VIP member. And all the supplements, of course, are available as well. Many of those on discount, especially if they're one of the newer supplements. They always come with an introductory price. But of course, the hats, the shirts, the designs are just classic. There's a lot of classic ones. There's a lot of, you know, new ones. There's new ones practically every day. If you haven't been to the site in a little while, go check out what is new at thealexjonesstore.com. Make a purchase, support the fight, and know that you have done a very important, you've played an important role in the retaking of our country and the stopping of the globalist scheme to enslave the world. I'm going to go to one more video about these Incas, and then we'll go out to some of your calls. I see Marcos in California has called in about the Incas. So this is clip number 16, history teacher, talking about how kind and loving the Incas were when they were murdering children. Let's watch.
I will die on this hill. I'm specifically talking about the Inga here. We're not talking about the Mexica. That's a whole separate type of sacrifice. If we're just looking at Tehuantin Suyu, the Quechua people of the Incan Empire, they practiced sacrifices like most other civilizations throughout history did in times of crisis. So famine, natural disasters. But the unique thing about the Quechua is that when you're looking at like the Incan civilization, you essentially have the elites and then you have everyone else. Sacrifices were volunteers from the elite class because they believed that the elites were closer to the gods and could therefore appease them better. Also, in terms of sacrifice, they were kind about it. Hear me out. Because unlike the Mexica, when you're like ripping out a still beating heart out of someone's chest, the Inca would intentionally use coca leaves and would use chicha and would drug up the sacrifice and then leave them on a mountain, a cold, chilly mountain, to be exposed to the elements.
Oh,
which,
okay.
If you're a volunteer sacrifice where you're heavily drugged before you die. Also, I mean, I can equate human sacrifice throughout history to so many things. And I think the fact that a lot of people are commenting, oh, but the sacrifice, is again indicative of the fact that you have received a quite white education because you are knowing them for the bad things that they have done and not all of the wonders that they accomplished. So I hope that this maybe helps you understand a different part of my most favorite civilization of all time, the Inca.
That is a great point. That's a great point. I should have thought about that. So instead of stabbing somebody, they would drug them and leave them on the side of a mountain. I didn't realize how enlightened they were. Matt Walsh said, quote, I don't know what's more deranged. The idea that it's kind to leave somebody to die on a mountaintop as long as you give them cocaine and hallucinogens ahead of time, or the idea that an 8-year-old child sacrifice could in any sense be considered a volunteer who consented to this practice. Yeah, I guess this is just the like end result of just decades and decades of just anti-white sentiment being poured into people, which is funny because obviously she projects that onto you, right? You've had a very white education where they taught you about things. I say, oh, it's very what you learned about the bad things these people did. No, we learned about the good things too. It's just, you know, making hats for llamas, very cute, but they commit child sacrifice. So they're not exactly an enlightened, progressive society exactly. Okay. They were Stone Age, undeveloped savages. That's what they were, actually. They did good things, too. They made trails. So, have I told you about the microclimates? Do you have any idea how many thousands of types of potatoes they had? So, we learn about the good things, too. It's just the bad things happened also. So, what would the solution be? To not teach the bad things or to teach the bad things as good things? I guess that's the tactic she's going with. So, I guess the white education tells you the Incas committed child sacrifice, and that's not a good thing. It's because they were superstitious and backwards and hadn't been enlightened and were still developing as a society. And I guess in her interpretation, I mean, that's bad. That's white people telling you about the past and about how bad things did happen in the past. No, what she wants is you to be taught that there were child sacrifices, but that was a good thing and that was perfectly equal in justice and, you know, civilizational accomplishment as, you know, the backward savages from Seville, right? Again, I actually have studied the Incas like quite a bit. Funnily enough, I actually really like the Incas, but you don't have to act like they are superior to the Spanish in the 1600s to appreciate or respect the Incas. I think they're pretty cool. I do think they were a lot less savage and a lot less brutal than a lot of their contemporaries in the South American or Central American continent. That's true. But they were not more advanced than the Spanish, dummy. And why you would even have to make that distinction. And so again, it's just this situation where, you know, they genuinely like, they want to see the world in sort of a hierarchy of worth. And they're mad that the Spanish are higher than the Incas on that. And they want to bring them down. When in reality, it's just, yeah, it's different. Every society practiced human sacrifice. Well, yeah, but not for 2,000 years or more. So, what the hell are you talking about? It wasn't even necessarily Christianity. I mean, the Romans abhorred child sacrifice. It was one of the big differences between them and Carthage. Carthage practiced child sacrifice. And yeah, there too, the elite would sacrifice their children. Again, she says that as if that's like a justification. It's like, don't worry, the babies they killed were rich. What? All right. Marcos in California, what's your take on the Incas, the Incan Empire, sir? You're on the air.
Yeah, actually, I kind of wanted to speak more about the Aztecs, but thanks for taking my call, Harrison.
Sure.
I was listening to a lecture by Professor Roy Casagrandes out of Austin, and he does a really great lecture on this subject. So he was saying some more about the Aztecs, that the bovine that they brought onto the swamps that the Aztecs used to cultivate as compost to regenerate their crops more so than the ground they would need to go fallow for many decades was very advanced for the time to support about 8 million people, more than anybody on the planet at the time. I'm Hispanic, so I'm getting back to more like of a Mesoamerican diet, and it's really helped me getting back to the corn, the squash, and the beans. And I realized that, you know, that high-fat European diet has just been wrecking my body. Hmm. So, I mean, and it kind of goes in with the WEF, like eat the bugs kind of thing, because the Aztecs did eat the bugs. I don't think it was all that a bad thing, you know, because they could process it. Also, the Aztecs had a very advanced calendar, and they saw the Europeans as killing just to kill when they would massacre villages. But and the Aztecs would not take weapons into war. They would take slaves for those sacrifices, and the meat that they would eat of those sacrifices was kind of like the WEF, like you'll get your 1 pound of flesh per year.
It was a treat.
It was a treat because they had a protein diet. Going to the Hopi prophecies and the Navajo prophecies, like each root race is commanded over one of the four elements. So the natives are the earth, the Asians are of the air, the blacks are supposed to preserve the water, and the whites have fire. And we won't escape this next cataclysm unless we work together. And I think that the native populations were really in tune with the earth and what they were entrusted to keep on this earth. And if given time, they would have...
Oh, I love this guy. Finish your thought.
Given time, they would have advanced their technology. And also, yes, you did mention the Greeks did give sacrifice like to the Minotaur. So just over time, they would have advanced. But at the time, they were in tune with nature.
There's a bunch of interesting stuff there. Did the Aztecs have a good star chart? I thought that was the Mayans. It's not even like to be disrespectful to the Incans or the Mayans, because, yeah, everybody's culture has to develop. And, you know, I should do like a book report or something, but that Will Durant has the story of civilization, and it was written in like it was published in the 30s, but it was written sort of in the early 1900s, which was the peak of civilization. Like, we've pretty much just declined since then. And, you know, history books written around then, there's no ambiguity about like, or, you know, effort to make it seem like all civilizations are totally equal. To them, they're like, no, there's kind of like steps that you can go up. And there's uncontacted tribes that are still sort of at the lowest level where they haven't developed even like basic organization. They're still sort of in a matriarchy, like steps from like matriarchy to patriarchy to, you know, small clan government to larger clan government. And, you know, especially back then when there were still a lot of uncontacted tribes or still swaths of Africa that had never been mapped, stuff like that. It would just go through and go, okay, this tribe is Stone Age. So we can look at this tribe and go, how did everybody in the Stone Age act? This is probably a pretty good, you know, view on it. So it's like, okay, you're looking at the civilizational development. Incas aren't as high as the Spanish. Does that mean they aren't human? No. Does that mean that they aren't, you know, worth consideration? No, obviously not. It's just a recitation of facts. Just they were not as developed as the Spanish. Spanish had guns and sailboats and the written word and all this other stuff. And then there's this, but then there's this effort to like want to invert that and go, actually, not only were the Incas not behind the Spanish, they were more advanced than the Spanish because they had cities that looked like animals. And it's like, what the hell are you talking about? You make your cities look like llamas and that's somehow evidence of your superiority? That's the argument she's making. So I don't know. It's all nonsense. I think the Spanish and, you know, their campaign into Mexico is one of the most epic stories in all of humanity. The burning of the boats, this tiny contingent. Of course, everybody knows the stories. It wasn't the Spanish against the Aztecs and just the Spanish against the Aztecs. It was the Spanish against the Aztecs along with all of the people that the Aztecs had subjugated and abused. So it was really a collection of smaller tribes creating an alliance with the Spanish against the Aztecs. And I've told the story before where they're walking through the city of the Aztecs and they're like blown away by it. And sure, they're like, this is amazing. It's marvelous. It's bigger than any European city. It's got these huge pyramids. It's got canals. It's got flowers going everywhere. And they're like, this is just amazing. This is incredible. And the Aztecs are showing them around and they're really proud. And they're, you know, here's our market. Here's this. And they're like, and, you know, come look at our temple. And the Spanish are like, okay, I bet it's beautiful too. And then they take him into a room and it's just like intestines hanging from the ceiling, skulls stacked up the entire way, some priest like sawing the heart out of a child. They're like, hi, welcome. And the Spanish are just like, oh my God, what is this? So, you know, it's like, yeah, you can look at the Aztec civilization and I'm sure on the surface it was very nice. But then at the heart of it was this satanic sacrifice, blood drinking, you know, heart of darkness. And it's like, yeah, I wouldn't blame the Spanish for being like, okay, we have landed in hell. Time to conquer the demons. If you walk into a room and the whole room is covered in gore and the Aztecs are like, what do you think? What do you think about our temple? What do you think about our decorations of the temple? Just like, yeah, I don't necessarily blame the Spanish for being like, we got to get out of here. We got to get out of here. Kill these people. Let's move on. Thank you very much for the call, Marcos. Let's go to Alex in Northern Virginia. Go ahead, Alex. You are on the air.
Good morning, Harrison.
Good morning.
So I just wanted to bring up real quick, a couple of days ago, we spoke about a letter that was written to President Trump. And it turns out that yesterday there was another letter that was written to the White House administration, and it's from I believe Irish and British writers, 100 of them, and they all calling for the secession and anything that has to do with supporting Israel, whether it's business, whether it's you know, 8,000 of their forms of potatoes, whatever it is, they are now. There's that letter that's floating around. There's a couple of letters. There's two of them, actually, that came out yesterday. One was sort of against the administration for supporting Israel. You know, they can't hide anything that they're doing anymore. It's just now everything's coming out to light, you know?
Yeah, I hadn't seen this. I don't know if this is what you're talking about. No, this must be something different. Spike Lee, Adam McKay, and over 2,000 writers decry Trump's un-American actions. Is that the one you're talking about?
That's the other letter against them. But it could be found in the, the Guardian and the Times of Israel.
Okay. And they're just asking them to stop supporting Israel. So, I mean, what are they going to do at this point? I mean, I had a story actually, because I was going to bring this up because, you know, they write these headlines that are like, Republicans scramble to deal with, you know, the defection over Israel. And it's like, well, you just, or I think it was Epstein in this case. And it's like, well, you just have to, A, stop lying about it, B, just do what you said you were going to do. Like, they're in this weird situation where, I don't know, it's like you want to get back together with your wife, but you won't stop cheating on her. You know, it's like you got to stop doing the thing that's making us mad, and then we'll stop being mad. But they're like, we want to keep supporting Israel to the hilt, but what are we going to do about everybody being mad? So they want to have their cake and eat it too. Where do they go from here, Alex?
Eventually, at some point, they're going to have to listen to the people.
Yeah.
At some point, nobody. It can't be hidden anymore. All their dark deeds is coming out in the light, and eventually righteousness is going to take over. Real quick, by the way, to the previous caller, I just want to add that the Aztecs and the Incans, they all had technology for gateways. And this is proven because I forgot the name of the mountain in Peru. There's a mountain in Peru where on the side of it, it's etched in a 40-foot-high gateway. And on top of that gateway, that doorway, there looks like something could go in the top of it to activate it, whether it's a plate,
or
whatever, but it's circular.
I know what you're talking about. And actually, I commented on the Inca stuff on X, and I had a lot of comments underneath of people pointing out, like, you know, the Incas were not the ones that built Machu Picchu. They arrived after. And you can see in the Inca constructions, you have these, like, really, it does seem advanced. It seems hard to even fathom how, there's the Gate of the Gods cut into the Peruvian mountain. Yeah, that's a crazy thing. I'm glad you brought that up. But, you know, they'll show.
It sure is.
It's like all of these rocks that are, like, really perfectly cut, totally flush with one another. And it's like half the wall looks like that. And then on top of that, the rocks are just kind of piled on. You can almost see, like, all right, this was one civilization, and then another civilization came and built on top of it. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some sort of, you know, pre-diluvian civilization, not just there, but that spread all over the world. I mean, look at that. We're showing the doorway to the god right now in Peru. I mean, I don't know what force creates something like that. I don't know how you do that without advanced tools, but a little bit more compelling than the 8,000 potatoes, I have to say. I have to say, the incredible carved out of a rock, mysterious doorway to nowhere is significantly more compelling to me in terms of this was an advanced civilization than the microclimates in the hole in the ground. But she's not making that argument. You're a crazy, kooky conspiracy theorist if you think they had some sort of advanced, you know, rock forming technology prior to the advent of heavy machinery. Interesting stuff. Thank you for the call, Alex. Let's go to Tax Slave in Pennsylvania. I want to talk about the Truman Show narrative we're living in. Go ahead. Tax Slave, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Smith.
Hello.
Let us step into the Truman Show, where the government is our friend. The government provides all that we need and want. They protect us from evil bad men. And they are just virtuous and kind. And in fact, the government's run by people that are public servants that sacrifice what they could have possibly been in the private sector to sacrifice their whole life to serving us. Now, let's go out into the atmosphere and open up the door and look behind that. The government is a criminal gang of murderers, thieves, thugs, and liars. And that's what they do. And I just am, you know, you were talking earlier, I don't particularly recall the subject. However, everything that you were talking about, and I listen to you every day, and I really love your show. Everything that we talk about are just instances of murderers, thieves, thugs, and liars. They steal our money, they kill people, they boss us around with their petty regulations and such, and they lie to us about everything. I mean, I had a list. I won't go through it. But if you go back, for example, to, like, Remember the Maine, the Lusitania, everything on forward, everything is a freaking lie. Pardon my almost French.
Yeah.
And I'm just appalled that we're living in such a false reality. Life could be beautiful. life could, we could be. Oh, and by the way, it ties into, you know, the whole notion of the Incas and their child sacrifice and all that. It wasn't the Incas per se. It was their government. Mm. It was their rulers. And it's the ruling class that just believes that they are beyond any moral values that, you know, we subscribe to. And by the way, with the internet and, you know, like with media and so forth, I mean, it's getting worse and worse and worse. I mean, going back to the main, I mean, that was yellow journalism was started, you know, by Hearst with that, you know, I'll give you a war if you want it, mm-hmm. kind of thing. And with the advent of technology as it is, we are just so far down a rotten hole. And I just hope, you know, I truly believe that the only way out is to disconnect. And at some point, I'm going to disconnect from all of this nonsense and technology and just give it up.
Well,
honestly, I think that's the only thing.
It's, you know, the beautiful thing about the Truman Show is you brought up at the beginning of the call is, you know, the point of it isn't, you know, necessarily to be an exact example of our real world or anything. I mean, people have likened it to social media and stuff. To me, the point is you can have everything you need. You can have a perfect life. You can have an ideal cage, and it's still not enough. There's something more that humans intrinsically strive for, even if everything is taken care of. And that really gets to the heart of, like, I think the difference between, it's this unspoken, almost like unidentifiable difference between the way people like myself and you approach things, and then the things we see out of the normies in this country. And it's sort of this just like ineffable difference where it's hard to pin down. You can't quite pin it down, but I think that's a good way of putting it. There are those of us who would try to escape the dome, and there are those of us who love the dome. And it really comes down to that. There are those of us who, even if you're comfortable, even if you're safe, you're a slave, you're a prisoner. You want to break free. You have this drive to see what's beyond this and to, you know, suffer and fail if that's what it has to be. But you'd rather suffer, you'd rather fail with free will than, you know, be a comfortable slave. And that really is an important spiritual distinction that I'm glad you highlight with the Truman Show narrative. You know, don't let them convince you that everybody believes the lies. When Benjamin Netanyahu stands up and says Gaza has been flattened by Hamas, he doesn't believe it, the guy he's telling doesn't believe it, and nobody watching him believes it. And the facade is going to fall eventually.
You were just telling me that you had a brain disease, and what did you do to fix it?
I found this guy's a functional medicine guy, and he got me on methylene blue, and that instantly stopped everything.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic. And so this guy's injecting in 1890, injects these rats with it, and then does an autopsy on these things. And their brain, the brainstem, every single nerve is blue. So he discovered this methylene blue has an affinity for neuronal tissue. So he says, well, it's sucking into neurons and working in the body. So we started putting it in humans. And we found out it's an MAOI, which helps with depression and anxiety and all kinds of life stress and stuff. It is so incredible that it acts as an electron donor to mitochondria, especially your neuronal mitochondria. So it helps you produce more ATP, and it helps you get rid of this stuff called reactive oxygen species. So you have an oxygen molecule, it should have two hydrogens on it, and like your body's job is to convert stuff into water so you can pee it out. So if you get an oxygen molecule, it's got 4, 5, 1, it's a reactive oxygen, which we call free radicals. So methylene blue goes in there and balances a lot of those things out in your brain and your nervous system. So it is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. And it's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
The strongest medical grade methylene blue, and this is what I'm on. Total mitochondria cleaning, next level energy. This is amazing. And you want to know what I'm on? Iris CMOS Shilajit. This right here, look at that. That is power. I'm on intermittent fasting. I'm 8 to 3 o'clock today. And I stopped eating crap food, stopped drinking. That's what I'm on right there, baby.